At the Opera House, Rick Deckard and Phil Resch were informed that the rehearsal had ended and Miss Luba Luft had left. "Did she say where she intended to go?" Phil Resch asked the stagehand, showing his identification.
"Over to the museum. She said she wanted to take in an exhibit of Edvard Munch that's there now. It ends tomorrow."
And Luba Luft, Rick thought to himself, ends today. They arrived at the museum, noted on which floor the Munch exhibit could be found, and ascended. Shortly they wandered amid paintings and woodcuts. Many people had turned out for the exhibit. "Did you ever hear of an Andy having a pet of any sort?" Phil Resch asked. For some obscure reason, Rick felt the need to be brutally honest. "In two cases that I know of, Andy's owned and cared for animals, but it generally fails. The Andy is unable to keep the animal alive. Animals require an environment of warmth to flourish, except for reptiles and insects." "Would a squirrel need that? An atmosphere of love? Because Buffy is doing fine, as sleek as an otter. I groom and comb him every day." "There's Luba Luft," Rick pointed. Holding a printed catalog, Luba Luft stood absorbed in the picture before her, a drawing of a young girl, hands clasped together, seated on the edge of a bed, an expression of bewildered wonder on her face. "Want me to buy it for you?" Rick said to Luba Luft. He stood beside her, holding laxly onto her upper arm. On the other side of her, Phil Resch put his hand on her shoulder, and Rick saw the bulge of the laser tube.
"It's not for sale."
Luba Luft glanced at him idly, then violently as she recognized him.
"I thought they arrested you."
"Miss Luft," he said, "this is Mr. Resch. Phil Resch, this is the quite well-known opera singer Luba Luft." To Luba, he said, "The harness bull that arrested me is an android. So was his superior. Do you know, did you know, an Inspector Garland? He told me that you all came here in one ship as a group." "The police department in which you called," Phil Resch said to her, "operating out of a building on mission, is the organizing agency by which it would appear your group keeps in touch. They even feel confident enough to hire a human bounty hunter, evidently."
"You?"
Luba Luft said.
"You're not human, no more than I am. You're an android, too."
An interval of silence passed. "Well," Phil Resch said, "we'll deal with that at a proper time." To Rick, he said, "Let's take her to my car." They prodded her in the direction of the museum elevator. At the end of the corridor near the elevator, a little store-like affair sold prints and art books. Luba halted there, tarrying.
"Listen,"
she said to Rick.
"Buy me a reproduction of that picture I was looking at. The one of the girl sitting on the bed."
After a pause, Rick said to the clerk, a heavy-jowled middle-aged woman, "Do you have a print of Munch's puberty?"
"Only in this book of his collected work,"
the clerk said.
$25.
"I'll take it." He reached for his wallet. "My departmental budget," Phil Resch said, "could never in a million years. My own money." Rick handed the woman the bills and Luba the book.
"It's very nice of you,"
Luba said as they entered the elevator.
"There's something very strange and touching about humans. An android would never have done that."
She glanced icily at Phil Resch.
"It wouldn't have occurred to him. As he said, never in a million years. I really don't like androids. Ever since I got here from Mars, my life has consisted of imitating the human. Imitating, as far as I'm concerned, a superior life form. Isn't that how it's been with you, Resch? Trying to be."
"I can't take this." Phil Resch dug into his coat, groped. "No," Rick said. He grabbed at Phil Resch's hand. "The Bonelli test!" "It's admitted it's an android," Phil Resch said. "We don't have to wait. But to retire it," Rick said, "because it's needling you? Give me that!" He struggled to pry the laser tube away from Phil Resch. The tube remained in Phil Resch's possession. Resch circled back within the cramped elevator, evading him, his attention on Luba Luft. "Okay," Rick said. "Retire it. Kill it now. Show it that it's right." He saw then that Resch meant to. "Wait!" Phil Resch fired. At the same instant, Luba Luft, in a spasm of frantic, hunted fear, twisted and spun away, dropping as she did. The beam burrowed a narrow hole silently into her stomach. She lay crouched against the wall of the elevator, screaming. With his own laser tube, Rick killed her. Luba Luft's body fell forward, face down in a heap. With his laser tube, Rick systematically burned into blurred ash the book of pictures he had just bought for Luba. Phil Resch watched without understanding. "You could have kept the book yourself. That cost you." "I could afford the book. I've made $3,000 so far today, and I'm not even half through." You're claiming Garland? But I killed him, not you. And Luba, too. I got her. You can't collect, Rick said. Not from your own department and not from ours. When we get to your car, I'll administer the Bonelli test or the Void Conf to you, and then we'll see, even though you're not on my list. You're sure I'm an android? Is that really what Garland said? That's what Garland said. Maybe he was lying, to split us apart, as we are now. We're nuts letting them split us. You were absolutely right about Luba Luft. I shouldn't have let her get my goat like that. But look, we would have had to retire Luba Luft anyhow. I'm getting out of this business, Rick said. I've had enough. She was a wonderful singer. The planet could have used her. This is insane. This is necessary. Remember, they killed humans in order to get away. And if I hadn't gotten you out of the Mission police station, they would have killed you. They're murderous, illegal aliens masquerading as police, Rick said. As bounty hunters. Okay, give me the Bonelli test. Maybe Garland lied. I think he did. False memories just aren't that good. What about my squirrel? The elevator had reached the first floor. Its doors opened. You stay with Luba. I'll get a patrol car here to take her to the Hall of Justice for her bone marrow test. He saw a phone booth, entered it, dropped in a coin, and his finger shaking, dialed. Meanwhile, a group of people gathered around Phil Resch and the body of Luba Luft. Emerging from the phone booth, he pushed his way back to Resch and the prone figure of the android girl. Someone had put a coat over her, not Resch's. Going up to Resch, he said, I hope to God you do test out as an android. You really hate me, Phil Resch said. I see a pattern. The way you killed Garland and Luba. You don't kill the way I do. You like to kill. All you need is a pretext. If you had a pretext, you'd kill me. As he and Resch walked back to the opera house, Resch said, I'll give you my laser tube now, so you won't have to worry about my reaction to the test, in terms of your own personal safety. He held out the tube and Rick accepted it. They ascended to the roof of the War Memorial Opera House and Phil Resch's parked hover car. Opening his briefcase, Rick fished out his test gear. Elaborate, Phil Resch observed, watching. Rick handed the adhesive pad to Phil Resch. Attach that to your cheek, firmly, and this light stays focused on your eye. Don't move. Keep your eyeball as steady as you can. Afterward, Rick sat in silence for a time. Then he began gathering his gear together, stuffing it back into the briefcase. I can tell by your face, Phil Resch said. He exhaled in absolute weightless, almost convulsive relief. Okay, you can give my gun back. Evidently you were right, Rick said, about Garland's motives, wanting to split us up. Do you have your ideology framed that would explain me as part of the human race? There is a defect in your empathic role-taking ability, Rick said, one which we don't test for, your feelings towards androids. Of course we don't test for that, Phil Resch said. Maybe we should. He had never thought of it before, had never felt any empathy of his own toward the androids he killed. Yet, in contrast to Phil Resch, a difference had manifested itself, and he felt instinctively that he was right. Empathy toward an artificial construct, he asked himself, something that only pretends to be alive? But Luba Luft had seemed genuinely alive. You realize, Phil Resch said quietly, what this would do. If we include androids in our range of empathic identification as we do animals, we couldn't protect ourselves. Absolutely. These Nexus 6 types, they'd roll all over us. He ceased, noticing that Rick was again hauling out his test gear. I thought the test was over. I want to ask myself a question, Rick said, and I want you to tell me what the needles register. Just give me the calibration. I can compute it myself. He plastered the adhesive disc against his cheek, arranged the beam of light until it fed directly into his eye. Are you ready? Watch the dials. We'll exclude time lapse in this. I just want magnitude. Sure, Rick. Aloud, Rick said. I'm going down by elevator with an android I've captured, and suddenly someone kills it, without warning. No particular response, Phil Resch said. What'd the needles hit? The left one 2.8, the right one 3.3. A female android, Rick said. Now they're up to 4.0 and 6 respectively. That's high enough. Rick removed the disc and shut off the beam of light. That's an empathically empathic response, he said. about what a human subject shows for most questions, except for the extreme ones. Meaning? I'm capable of feeling empathy for at least specific, certain androids. Not all of them, but one or two. For Luba Luft, as an example, he said to himself. So I was wrong. There's nothing unnatural or unhuman about Phil Resch's reactions. It's me. You're in a spot, Deckard, Phil Resch said. It's sex. Sex? Because she, it, was physically attractive. Hasn't that ever happened to you before? We were taught that it constitutes a prime problem in bounty hunting. Don't you know, Deckard, that in the colonies they have android mistresses? It's illegal, Rick said. Sure, it's illegal. Most variations in sex are illegal. But people do it anyhow. Wake up, Deckard. You wanted to go to bed with a female android. Nothing more, nothing less. I felt that way, on one occasion, when I had just started bounty hunting. Don't let it get you down. You'll heal. What's happened is that you've got your order reversed. Don't kill her, or be present when she's killed, and then feel physically attracted. Do it the other way. Rick stared at him. Go to bed with her first? And then kill her, Phil Resch said. Like an arc of pure fire, John R. Isidore soared across the late afternoon sky on his way home from his job. I wonder if she's still there, he said to himself. He had already stopped off at the black market grocery. On the seat beside him, a bag of such delicacies as bean curd, ripe peaches, good, soft, evil-smelling cheese rocked back and forth, all rarities for which he had squandered 2 weeks' salary, borrowed in advance from Mr. Sloat, and, in addition, a bottle of Chablis wine, the greatest rarity of all. Presently, he stood in front of Pris Stratton's door, rapping with the edge of the wine bottle, his heart going to pieces inside his chest.
Who's there?
This is J.R. Isidore speaking. I have a few desirable items here, and I think we could put together a more than reasonable dinner if you could let me in.
She held the door open wide enough for him to enter, and then, seeing what he carried, her face ignited with elfin, exuberant glee. But almost at once, the glee was gone.
What is it? He said.
He carried the packages to the kitchen, set them down, and hurried back.
They're wasted on me.
Why?
Oh, sometime I'll tell you.
She raised her eyes, and then...
It was nice of you, anyhow. Now I'd wish you'd leave. I don't feel like seeing anyone.
I know what's the matter with you. You don't have any friends. You're a lot worse than when I saw you this morning. It's because...
I have friends. Or I had. 7 of them. But the bounty hunters had time to get to work, so maybe you're right.
What's a bounty hunter?
That's right. You people aren't supposed to know. A bounty hunter is a professional murderer who's given a list of those he's supposed to kill. He's paid a sum for each he gets.
And they're after you? No wonder you're scared and don't want to see anybody.
But he thought, it must be a delusion. She must be psychotic. Maybe she's a special.
I'll get them first, he said.
With what?
I'll get a license to carry a laser beam. It's easy to get out here where there's hardly anybody.
That's very nice of you. But if bounty hunters got the others, got Max Polakoff and Garland and Luba and Roy Batty, Roy and Irmgard Batty, if they're dead, then it really doesn't matter. They're my best friends. Why the hell don't I hear from them, I wonder?
Making his way into the kitchen, he got down dusty, long unused plates and bowls and glasses. He began washing them in the sink. Presently, Pris appeared. He uncorked the Chablis, divided the peaches and the cheese and the bean curd.
What's the white stuff, not the cheese?
It's made from soybean whey. I wish I had some...
He broke off, flushing. It used to be eaten with beef gravy.
An android,
Pris murmured.
That's the sort of slip an android makes. That's what gives it away.
She came over, stood beside him, and then, to his stunned surprise, put her arm around his waist.
I'll try a slice of peach,
she said, and gingerly picked up a slippery slice with her long fingers. And then, as she ate, she began to cry.
God damn it. Well, see, we lived on Mars. That's how come I know androids.
And the only people on Earth that you know, Isidore said, are your fellow ex-immigrants.
We knew each other before the trip. A settlement near New York, Roy, Batty, and Irmgard ran a drugstore. He was a pharmacist, and she handled the beauty aids, the creams and ointments. On Mars, they use a lot of skin conditioners. I got various drugs from Roy. I needed them at the time because... Well, anyhow, it's an awful place. This...
She swept in the room, the apartment, in one violent gesture.
This is nothing. You think I'm suffering because I'm lonely? Hell, all Mars is lonely. Much worse than this.
Don't the androids keep you company? I heard a commercial on... Seating himself, he ate, and presently she picked up the glass of wine. She sipped, expressionlessly.
The androids,
she said,
are lonely too. We came back because nobody should have to live there. It wasn't conceived for habitation, at least not within the last billion years. It's so old. You feel it in the stones, the terrible old age.
A knock sounded on the hall door.
I can't go,
Pris whispered.
I wonder if the door's locked. God, I hope so.
A far-off voice from the hall called. Pris, are you in there? It's Roy and Irmgard. We got your card. Rising and going into the bedroom, Pris reappeared carrying a pen and a scrap of paper. She scratched out a hasty message. You go to the door. Isidore nervously took the pen from her and wrote, and say what? With anger, Pris scratched out, see if it's really them. Getting up, he walked glumly into the living room. How would I know it was them? He inquired of himself. He opened the door. Two people stood in the dim hall, a small woman, lovely in the manner of Greta Garbo, with blue eyes and yellow blonde hair, the man, larger, with intelligent eyes but flat Mongolian features which gave him a brutal look.
We're looking...
The woman began, but then she saw past Isidore. Her face dissolved in rapture, and she whisked past him, calling...
Pris, how are you?
Isidore turned. The two women were embracing. He stepped aside, and Roy Batty entered, somber and large, smiling his crooked, tuneless smile. Well, they got Polakov, Roy Batty said. They got Garland, and a little earlier today they got Luba. I didn't think they'd get Luba. Remember, I kept saying that during the trip.
Oh, God. Well, they had this investigator, this bounty hunter,
Irmgard said,
named Dave Holden, and then Polakov almost got him.
Almost got him. Roy echoed, his smile now immense.
So he's in this hospital,
Irmgard continued.
And evidently they gave his list to another bounty hunter, and Polakov almost got him too. But it wound up with him retiring Polakov. And then he went after Luba. We know because she managed to get a hold of Garland. See, Luba called us right after Garland's agent picked up the bounty hunter. She was sure it would be okay. She was so sure that Garland would kill him. But evidently something went wrong on mission. We don't know what. Maybe we never will. Does this bounty hunter have our names?
Pris asked.
Oh, yes, dear. I suppose he does,
Irmgard said.
But he doesn't know where we are, and we've decided to take one of these abandoned apartments in this ratty old building.
Is that wise? Isidore spoke up, summoning courage. To all be in one place.
Well, they got everybody else,
Irmgard said. Why don't you move in with him? Roy said to Pris. He could give you a certain amount of protection.
A chicken head?
Pris said.
I'm not going to live with a chicken head. I think you're foolish to be a snob at a time like this,
Irmgard said. I think you should move in with Isidore, Roy said. And I think Irm and I should live here in the same building. I've got some electronic components in my car, junk I ripped off the ship. I'll install a two-way bug and I'll rig up an alarm system. I think there's a reason why the three of us are still alive. I think if he had any clue as to where we were, he'd have shown up by now.
And if he waits,
Irmgard said,
we slip away like we've done. I bet Roy is right. I bet he has our names but no location. Poor Luba. Stuck in the War Memorial Opera House, right out in the open. No difficult finding her.
Well, Roy said, she wanted it that way. She believed she'd be safer as a public figure.
You told her otherwise,
Irmgard said. Yes, I told her. And I told Polakov not to try to pass himself off as a WPO man. And I told Garland that one of his own bounty hunters would get him, which is very possibly, just conceivably, what did happen. Isidore spoke up. I'd gather from listening to Mr. Batty that he's your natural leader?
Oh, yes, Roy's a leader,
Irmgard said.
He's organized our trip,
Pris said.
From Mars to here.
Then Isidore said, you'd better do what he suggests. I think it would be terrific, Pris, if you lived with me. I'll stay home a couple of days from my job. I have a vacation coming to make sure that you're okay. Incredible, he thought, that the police can't do anything. I can't believe that. These people must have done something. Irmgard and I'll stay in this apartment, Roy said. Pris, you go with Mr. Isidore. He led Pris upstairs to his own apartment, dark and empty and stuffy, and lukewarm as it was. Carrying her possessions into the bedroom, he at once turned on the heater, lights, and the TV. I hope, Isidore said, I can help make your stay here on Earth pleasant. He felt sure that he could. It seemed to him a cinch, the culmination of his whole life. As soon as he officially quit work that evening, Rick Deckard flew across town to Animal Row. The several blocks of big-time animal dealers with their huge glass windows and lurid signs.
Yes, sir, a Natalie-dressed new animal salesman said to him. See anything you like?
I've got 3,000 cash. How much is that family of rabbits over there?
Sir, if you have a down payment of 3,000, I can make you an owner of something a lot better than a pair of rabbits. What about a goat?
I haven't thought much about goats, Rick said.
May I ask if this represents a new price bracket for you?
Well, I don't usually carry around 3,000.
I thought as much, sir, when you mentioned rabbits. The thing about rabbits, sir, is that everybody has one. I'd like to see you step up to the goat class, where I feel you belong. Frankly, you look more like a goat man to me.
Is this goat female? He noticed a big black goat standing squarely in the center of its cage.
Yes, this goat is female, a black Nubian goat, very large as you can see. This is a superb contender in the year's market, sir, and we're offering her at an attractive, unusually low price.
On a slip of paper, the salesman scribbled a price and then briefly, almost furtively, showed it to Rick. The expense appalled him. He found himself shaking, but he said to himself, the experience with Phil Resch. I have to get my confidence back, my faith in myself and my abilities back, or I won't keep my job.
Hi.
Iran greeted him, busy in the kitchen with dinner.
Why so late tonight?
Come up to the roof, he said. I want to show you something.
You bought an animal.
She followed him out of the apartment.
You shouldn't have gotten it without me. I have a right to participate in the decision, the most important acquisition.
I wanted it to be a surprise, he said.
You made some bounty money today?
Yes. I retired 3 Andes. They entered the elevator. I had to buy this. Something went wrong today, something about retiring them. It wouldn't have been possible for me to go on without getting an animal. The elevator had reached the roof. He led his wife out into the evening darkness, to the cage. Switching on the spotlights, he pointed to the goat.
Oh my God,
Iran said.
Is it really real?
Absolutely real.
It's a goat, a black Nubian goat.
Female, so maybe later on we can mate her, and we'll get milk out of which we can make cheese.
Can we let her out? Put her where the sheep is?
She ought to be tethered, he said, for at least a few days.
My life is love and pleasure,
Iran said.
An old, old song by Joseph Strauss, remember? When we first met?
She kissed him.
Much love and very much pleasure.
Thanks, he said, and hugged her.
Let's run downstairs and give thanks to Mercer. Then we can come up here again and right away name her. She needs a name.
Something warned him. Something made him say, let's not go down to the apartment yet. Let's stay up here with the goat. The elevator, however, had come. Iran, wait! She held the elevator door from sliding shut.
Get in, Rick. This'll be just for a moment. You hardly ever undergo fusion. I want you to transmit the mood you're in now to everyone else. It would be immoral to keep it for ourselves.
She was, of course, right. In their living room, at the empathy box, Iran swiftly snapped the switch, her face animated with growing gladness.
I want everyone to know,
she told him. He drew her away from the empathy box. Listen, I want to talk about what happened to me today. I met another bounty hunter, one I never saw before, a predatory one who seemed to like to destroy them. For the first time after being with him, I looked at them differently. I mean, in my own way, I had been viewing them as he did.
Won't this wait?
I took a test, one question, Rick said, and verified it. I've begun to empathize with androids. That's why I bought the goat. I never felt like that before. Maybe it could be a depression, like you get. I can understand how you suffer when you get depressed.
What about your job?
He blinked.
Your job?
She repeated.
What are the monthly payments on the goat?
She held out her hand. He got out the contract and passed it to her.
That much,
she said.
And you did this because you were depressed? Not as a surprise for me, as you originally said. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm still glad you got the goat. I love the goat. But it's such an economic burden.
I can get switched to some other desk, Rick said. The vidphone rang. It's the department, he said. Say I'm not here. He headed for the bedroom.
Hello,
Iran said into the receiver. 3 more Andes, Rick thought, that I should have followed up on today, instead of coming home. On the vid screen, Harry Bryant's face had formed, so it was too late to get away.
Yes, he's here,
Iran was saying.
We bought a goat. Come over and see it, Mr. Bryant.
A pause, then she held the receiver up to Rick.
He has something he wants to say to you.
Hello? Rick said into the receiver. We have a tail on the 2 remaining androids, Harry Bryant said. Obviously, they've become alerted. They've left the address that Dave gave you, and now they can be found at... wait. Bryant groped about his desk. Automatically, Rick searched for a pen. He held the goat payment contract on his knee and prepared to write. Conapt Building 3967-C, Inspector Bryant said. Get over there as soon as you can. We have to assume that they know about the ones you picked off. That's why they've taken unlawful flight. Unlawful? Rick repeated. To save their lives? By the way, I talked to Dave, Bryant said. I told him the trouble they gave you. He says congratulations and be more careful. He says the Nexus 6 types are smarter than he thought. In fact, he couldn't believe you got 3 in one day. 3 is enough, Rick said. I can't do anything more. I have to rest. By tomorrow, they'll be gone, Bryant said. Out of the jurisdiction. You get over there tonight. At the black empathy box, his wife crouched, her face wrapped. On the screen, the faint, old-robed figure of Mercer toiled upward, and all at once, a rock sailed past him. Watching, Rick thought, my God, there's something worse about my situation than his. Mercer doesn't have to do anything alien to him. He suffers, but at least he isn't required to violate his own identity. Bending, he gently removed his wife's fingers from the twin handles. He then himself took her place. A landscape of weeds confronted him, a desolation. The air smelled of harsh blossoms. This was the desert. A man stood before him, a sorrowful light in his weary, pain-drenched eyes. Mercer, Rick said. I am your friend, the old man said. But you must go on as if I did not exist. Can you understand that? No, I can't understand that. I need help. How can I save you, the old man said, if I can't save myself? Don't you see? There is no salvation. Then what's this for? What are you for? To show you that you aren't alone. I'm here with you and always will be. Go and do your task, even though you know it's wrong. Why? Why should I do it? I'll quit my job and immigrate. You will be required to do wrong no matter where you go. It is the basic condition of life to be required to violate your own identity. At some time, every creature which lives must do so. It is the ultimate shadow, the defeat of creation. This is the curse at work, the curse that feeds on all life, everywhere in the universe. That's all you can tell me? Rick said. A rock whizzed at him. He ducked and the rock struck him on the ear. At once he let go of the handles and again he stood in his own living room. His head ached wildly from the blow. Reaching, he found fresh blood spilling in huge bright drops down the side of his face. Iran, with a handkerchief, patted his ear.
I guess I'm glad you pried me loose. I really can't stand it being hit. Thanks for taking the rock in my place.
I'm going, Rick said.
The job?
3 jobs. He went to the hall door, still dizzy.
Good luck,
Iran said. Rick reached the roof and a moment later sat in the darkness of his hover car, dialing.
Rosen Association?
Rachel Rosen, he said. He waited. 10 minutes later, Rachel Rosen's small, dark face appeared on the vid screen.
Hello, Mr. Deckard.
Are you busy right now, or can I talk to you? He said.
I told you that without me, one of the Nexus Sixes would get you before you got it.
You were wrong.
But you are calling. Anyhow. Do you want me to come down there to San Francisco?
Tonight, he said.
Oh, it's too late. I'll come tomorrow. It's an hour trip.
I've been told I have to get them tonight. Out of the original 8, 3 are left.
You really are tired. You look dazed. Are you sure you know what you're doing trying for 3 more Nexus 6s the same day? No one has ever retired 6 androids in one day.
I need you, he said. Otherwise I'm going to die, he said to himself.
I'm sorry, Rick, but I don't really understand. I can tell that you don't want to do this job tonight. Maybe not at all. Are you sure you want me to make it possible for you to retire the 3 remaining androids? Or do you want me to persuade you not to try?
Come down here, he said. We'll rent a hotel room.
Why?
Something I heard today about situations involving human men and android women. Come down here to San Francisco tonight and I'll give up on the remaining Andes. We'll do something else. In the sumptuous hotel room, Rick Deckard sat reading the typed carbon sheets on the 2 androids, Roy and Ermgard Batty. In these 2 cases, telescopic snapshots had been included. The door of the hotel room banged open.
Oh, what a flight,
Rachel Rosen said, entering in a long, fish-scale coat with matching bra and shorts. She carried a paper bag.
This is a nice room. Here, I bought a bottle of bourbon.
The worst of the 8 is still alive, Rick said, the one who organized them. He held the poop sheet on Roy Batty toward her.
You've located this one?
She asked after reading. I have a CONAP number out in the suburbs. Rachel held out her hand.
Let's see the others.
He passed her the sheets, one dealing with Ermgard Batty, the other an android calling itself Pris Stratton.
Oh,
Rachel said.
I think maybe you're going to get thrown by the last one. Maybe not.
She had turned pale. Exactly what are you muttering about?
Let's open the bourbon.
Rachel carried the paper bag into the bathroom, got 2 glasses, and returned.
Can you get this open?
She asked.
It's worth a fortune, you realize.
Taking the bottle, he opened it, poured the bourbon. Tell me what's the matter, he said.
On the phone, you told me if I flew down here tonight, you'd give up on the remaining 3 Andes. But here we are. Tell me what you're going to do instead of fussing and fretting around about those last 3 Nexus 6 Andes.
She unbuttoned her coat, carried it to the closet and hung it up. This gave him the first chance to have a good long look at her. The total impression was good. He sipped the bourbon. The power of it had become almost unfamiliar to him and he had trouble swallowing. Rachel, in contrast, had no difficulty. Seating herself on the bed, Rachel smoothed absently at the spread. He arranged himself beside her. What is it? He said. He took hold of her hand. It felt cold, bony, slightly moist. What upset you?
The last goddamn Nexus 6 type. Didn't you notice the description? It's of me. She may wear her hair differently and dress differently, but when you see her, you'll know what I mean.
Why does that bother you so much?
Hell, I'll be along when you retire her.
Maybe not. Maybe I won't find her.
I know Nexus 6 psychology,
Rachel said.
That's why I'm here. That's why I can help you. They're all holed up together, clustered around the deranged one calling himself Roy Batty. He'll be masterminding their crucial all-out final defense.
Cheer up, Rick said. He cupped her sharp, small chin in the palm of his hand, lifted her head so that she had to face him. Leaning forward an inch, he kissed her dry lips. Rachel remained impassive, as if unaffected, yet he sensed otherwise. Or perhaps it was wishful thinking.
I wish that I had known that before I came. I never would have flown down here. I think you're asking too much. You know what I have toward this Pris android?
Empathy?
Something like that. Identification. There goes I.
Rising, she got to the bourbon bottle. She refilled her glass and drank again swiftly. She settled back onto the bed and stretched out, and sighed.
Forget the three Andes. I'm so worn out. From the trip, I guess. And from all I learned today.
She glared at him.
Do you know why I really came here? Why Eldon and the other Rosens, the human ones, wanted me to go along with you?
To observe, he said. To detail exactly what the Nexus 6 does that gives it away on the Void Comp test.
On the test or otherwise. Everything that gives it a different quality. Then I report back and the Association makes modifications. And then we have the Nexus 7.
Damn you.
I can't help you anyhow because I'm drunk. Anyhow, you know the truth. I'm just an observer and... See, if I go to that suburban broken-down Connept building...
She reached out, toyed with a button on his shirt. In slow, facile twist, she began unbuttoning it.
I don't dare go because androids have no loyalty to one another. And I know that that goddamn Pris Stratton will destroy me and occupy my place. See? Take off your coat.
Why?
So we can go to bed.
I bought a black Nubian goat. He said. I have to retire 3 more Andes. I have to finish my job and go home to my wife. I can't go without you now. I can't even leave here. Polakov came after me. Garland virtually came after me. She reached back and unfastened her bra. With agility, she slid it from her. He finished undressing her, exposed her pale, cold loins.
We're not born. We don't grow up. Instead of dying from illness or old age, we wear out like ants. Ants. That's what we are. Not you. I mean me. Chitinous reflex machines who aren't really alive.
She twisted her head to one side, said loudly,
I'm not alive. You're not going to bed with a woman. Don't be disappointed, okay? Have you ever made love to an android before?
No, he said, taking off his shirt and tie.
I understand. They tell me. It's convincing if you don't think too much about it. But if you think too much, if you reflect on what you're doing, then you can't go on. For... physiological reasons.
Bending, he kissed her bare shoulder.
Thanks, Rick. Remember, though, don't think about it. Just do it.
Afterward, he said, I still intend to look for Roy Batty. I still need you to be there. I think in spite of what you said, you'll help me all you can. Otherwise, you wouldn't be lying there in this bed.
I love you. If I entered a room and found a sofa covered with your hide, I'd score very high on the Voight Kampf test.
Tonight, sometime, he thought as he clicked off the bedside light, I will retire a Nexus 6 which looks exactly like this naked girl. My good God, he thought, I've wound up where Phil Resch said. Go to bed with her first, then kill her. I can't do it, he said, and backed away from the bed.
I wish you could.
Rachel said. Not because of you. Because of Pris Stratton, what I have to do with her.
We're not the same. I don't care about Pris Stratton. Listen. Go to bed with me and I'll retire Stratton. Okay? Because I can't stand getting this close and then...
Thank you, he said. Two, he thought. I now have only 2 to retire. Just the Batties. Would Rachel really do it?
God damn it, get into bed,
Rachel said. He got into bed. Afterward, they enjoyed a great luxury. Rick had room service bring up coffee. Rachel said,
Did you enjoy that?
Yes,
Would you ever go to bed with an android again?
If it was a girl. If she resembled you. Rachel smiled.
Do you know what the lifespan of a humanoid robot such as myself is? I've been in existence 2 years. How long do you calculate I have?
After a hesitation, he said, about 2 more years?
They never could solve that problem. I mean cell replacement.
Her face had become expressionless. I'm sorry, Rick said. If you weren't an android, if I could legally marry you, I would. Then, saying little, the two of them journeyed to the roof field, where his hover car was parked. They headed toward the suburbs of San Francisco. This is my end, he said to himself, as a bounty hunter. After the baddies, there won't be any more. Not after this, tonight.
You look so sad,
Rachel said. Putting his hand out, he touched her cheek.
You're not going to be able to hunt androids any longer. So don't look sad. Please.
He stared at her.
No bounty hunter ever has gone on after being with me. Except one. A very cynical man. Phil Resch. And he's nutty. He works out in left field on his own.
I see, Rick said. He felt numb, completely.
But this trip we're taking,
Rachel said,
won't be wasted, because you're going to meet a wonderful spiritual man.
Roy Batty? Do you know all of them?
I knew all of them when they still existed.
I think I can still go ahead and retire Roy Batty, he said, but not Irmgard Batty. And not Pris Stratton, he thought, even now, even knowing this. So all that took place at the hotel, he said. Consisted of a...
The association wanted to reach the bounty hunters here and in the Soviet Union. This seemed to work.
I doubt if it works as often or as well as they say.
But it has with you.
We'll see.
I already know,
Rachel said.
When I saw that expression on your face, the grief, I look for that.
How many times have you done this?
I don't remember. 7, 8? No, I believe it's 9.
She, or rather it... nodded.
Yes, 9 times.
The idea is old-fashioned, Rick said.
What?
He put the car into a gliding decline. Or anyhow, that's how it strikes me. I'm going to kill you and go on to Roy and Irmgard Batty and Pris Stratton alone.
That's why you're landing? There's a fine. I'm the property, the legal property of the association. I'm not an escaped android who fled here from Mars. I'm not in the same class as the others.
But if I can kill you, then I can kill them. Her hands dived for the bulging, overstuffed, kipple-filled purse. She searched frantically, then gave up.
Will you kill me in a way that won't hurt? I mean, do it carefully. If I don't fight, okay? I promise not to fight. Do you agree?
I can't stand the way you androids give up, he said. The car now swooped to the ground. He slammed off the motor and got out his laser tube.
At the occipital bone, the posterior base of my skull. Please.
Putting his laser tube away, Rick said, I can't do what Phil Resch said. He snapped the motor back on, and a moment later they had taken off again. I'm not going to kill you. Your car is at the St. Francis, isn't it? I'll let you off there and you can head for Seattle.
Thanks. But you really look down on me for what I did. You've gone the way of the others. The bounty hunters before you. Each time they get furious and talk wildly about killing me. But when the time comes, they can't do it. Just like you. Just now.
She lit a cigarette, inhaled with relish.
You realize what this means, don't you? It means I was right. You won't be able to retire any more androids. It won't be just me. It'll be the baddies and Stratton, too. So go on home to your goat and get some rest.
He said nothing. Rachel poked about, found the car's radio, and switched it on. Turn it off, Rick said.
Turn off Buster Friendly and his friendly friends? It's time to hear Buster's big sensational exposé. He's been talking about it, building up to it for...
Rick shut off the radio. Rachel clicked the radio back on.
I want to listen. I intend to listen. This is important, what Buster Friendly has to say on his show tonight.
The idiotic voice babbled once more from the speaker, and Rachel Rosen settled back and made herself comfortable. Beside him, in the darkness, the coal of her cigarette glowed like the rump of a complacent lightning bug, a steady, unwavering index of Rachel Rosen's achievement, her victory over him.